Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
It's The Amazing Show, featuring the amazing James Randi. For more information on all things Randi, including the Million Dollar Challenge, head to randi.org. Hello and welcome to The Amazing Show. I'm Justin Robert Young from iTricks.com and TalkingHeadTV.com. And joining me, as always, in the Isaac Asimov Library of the James Randi Educational Foundation, it's the man who makes the show, the amazing James Randi.
Having just returned from Fresno, California, where I'd never been before, it's a very rare experience that I visit a city in the United States, particularly that I've never been to before, but this is my first visit. Very pleasant. Gave a lecture there. Good reaction, and they paid me.
Which is always good.
Oh, yes.
After you get done with the lecture. So, Fresno, good city?
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Yes. Good times. All right. Well, our question this week comes from, I might murder this name, but looks like a Jerome Wies from the Netherlands. He asks, in all the years of challenging the claims for psychics, you must have built up quite some knowledge on how to test all the different claims and analyze how to use non-paranormal means to reach the same result. I was wondering if you ever consult others to help you reveal possible non-paranormal methods, and who are your favorite guys and gals on that list?
That's about four or five questions right there.
Well,
first thing is
a whole podcast.
Yeah, but the first thing they point to make here, Justin, is that these people don't do anything. It's not that they have secret methods of doing what they do.
Yes.
What they try to do doesn't work. That's the conclusion we come to in most cases, because most people, in fact, almost all the people who have applied for the prize have been innocent, self-deceived people who have fooled themselves. That's what
self-deceiving. By no means malicious. They're not out there to con people out of money.
They're not trying to cheat at all. They just don't know how to judge whatever they think they've got as a way of a power. But every now and then, people will come forward and try to fool me, and I squash that very quickly simply by telling them what the conditions of the examination will be. For example, some fellow whose name I've forgotten, I think he comes from Brooklyn. That's, you can't hold that against him, you know. Everyone's got to come from someplace.
Yeah.
There you go. And he challenged me. He said that he would come to Florida. Oh, boy. And he would, that I could take a person of my choice and I could send that person away to some location somewhere within the city of Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, I think we've actually gone over this on one of the one of the older podcasts. Yeah,
it's quite possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I think part of the reason why you've been so effective at this is as a magician and somebody who thinks in that kind of method of deceiving and hiding certain elements of what you're doing. You come at it at a different angle than, let's say, a scientist would. Are there any other people that maybe would have different skill sets or similar skill sets to yours?
Well, yes, of course there'd be different skill sets, but most scientists are not prepared to be able to do this.
Yes.
Because they think in a scientific way. You see, they think in a straight line from A to B is the shortest distance between the two points. But the magician thinks of folding space, so to speak, so that A coincides with B. And think of a piece of paper with two points on it, say 4 or 5 inches apart, labeled A and B. The shortest distance between the two would seem to be to draw a straight line between A and B and measure it, and that's the shortest distance. But the magician thinks of folding the paper so that point A and point B coincide.
Yes.
Now, that's the idea that's been put forth for interstellar travel and such. Intergalactic travel, even. Why not? If you're going to go interstellar, you might as well go intergalactic.
Let's do it big.
But the magician has to think this way. The magician has to think around corners and has to think of folding the paper, so to speak. And we have that peculiar expertise. I mean, this is not every magician.
Yes.
There are lots of people out there that do magic acts and do magic tricks, and some that entertain children, some entertain adults. Now, I could name a couple of prominent people who work in the leading night spots of this country and of the UK as well, who are very, very competent at what they do. They're huge entertainers. They do very, very well financially. They do very well professionally. They are really great at what they do. But in some cases, they don't really know how the things they do work. They don't understand the basic principles behind them.
Really?
For example, they mess around with something. They try it. They try this approach. They try that approach. And suddenly find, oh, that works much better if you do it this way. But they do it by experiment. And that's fine. You can arrive at it by experiment, certainly. It's like singing a song. I'm sure I'm not a singer and never hope to be one. But and the rest of the world is spared that that travesty. But I'm sure that in practicing and just humming around the dressing room, they come up with a little trill or a way of attacking a note or a phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, yeah, I'm going to use that.
That
tonight.
Works. Yeah.
And if it works, they maintain it. They keep it. And that's the way the magician works, too.
Okay. So you would say that there'd be a difference in terms of magical thinking between, you know, let's say, engineers and mechanics.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. In many cases, the engineers are much better at investigating these so-called phenomena or claims of these phenomena than scientists are. Because, as I said a moment ago, scientists think in a straight line, and they assume that a crystal of copper sulfate or a proton or a platelet in the blood or whatever will do exactly the same thing if it is under exactly the same influences.
Yes.
And it will do it repeatedly. That's not necessarily so when it comes down to the real world, because what they might call the same conditions might not be the same conditions. There may be slight variances, and there are variables in there that they're not aware of. And you can predict that, for example, you mix two bumblebees with two Volkswagens and stir them up in a box and count, and you're going to get four.
Yeah.
No matter how hard you count, except that the bumblebees may be damaged and the cars might not be exactly in good condition either. But the total number of objects in there, and you have to allow for pieces falling off the bumblebees or the cars.
Some degradation.
Yes, exactly. And you see, those are some of the variations that you've got to bring into account.
And speaking to Mr. Weeze's question, it's very rare that you see something and you're like, well, I know something fishy is going on here, but I can't figure it out completely. Let me call somebody up and show them a tape and just see what their thoughts are.
Well, there was a time
many,
many years ago when I first started in this, where I would get puzzled every now and then I would consult with somebody in the profession or with the scientist, as a matter of fact. And the answer would be made known to me, and I'd observe it again, and by golly, that was right. That is the solution. So it's a learning process, and not only that, as a magician, I pretty well know how the tricks are done, and that's a generalized statement. It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't mean that I know every twist on each and every one of them. For example, I do a version of what's known in the trade as out of this world. It's a card trick. Mm-hmm. And I do a version of it that I did on BBC a couple of years ago. And the reaction was very interesting. A couple of people with the magic circle called me and asked me about this variation. They know the trick out of this world. Most magicians, competent magicians, will know it or have seen it or know the modus operandi. They may not do it, may not do it regularly. I do it quite often. And I have a version of it that quite confounds them, because I've got a twist on it that they don't recognize at all, and they can watch the whole thing, and then suddenly it dawns on them, oh, wait a minute, at point D there, what happened? There's a big jump in the rationale there. That couldn't have happened that way. He would have had to do X or Y or whatever. And so it puzzled them no end, and I still haven't quite revealed that, not to the Magic Circle. Incidentally, I have just rejoined the Magic Circle. And that's a very prestigious magical organization in the UK, and I was a member many years ago. I was inducted into the Magic Circle, as they say, and I became an MIMC, which is Member of the Inner Magic Circle, with gold star yet.
Wink.
I mean, think
all
of
right.
that. I mean, there's a glow around my body, you can tell. But some years ago, I I neglected to pay the dues, which are due
that's
every year.
Part of the rules.
I just neglected because I didn't get a chance to go to the UK and attend meetings and such, so I had no real benefit from it. I didn't resign. I just let it lapse, and then I reapplied to them recently because I will be going over to the UK shortly, and I would like to have access to the books, the library, the whatnot, and the brains of the magicians there that I could tap into. And we magicians are very generous in that respect because it is a very closed profession and it's a rather select profession. And by sharing our information and by seeking information from other people in the trade, we amplify the trade. The trade grows. Mm-hmm. It gets better. And sometimes some little thing that you imparted to a member of the profession, you see many years later, you see it being incorporated on a television program or whatever. You say, hey, that was my idea. Damn, it worked. And you get that satisfaction, I must say. That's why I rejoined the Magic Circle. First of all, I like the camaraderie because they're lovely folks, and they have a brand new headquarters now, and just a stunning headquarters, as a matter of fact. I don't know quite how they landed that, but they did, and it's really stunning. They've just changed their president, as a matter of fact. A new fellow has moved in, a gentleman with whom I'm not all that familiar, but I know him. And it'll be very interesting.
Happy you're paying
to get
dues
back.
Again.
What's
probably.
That?
He's probably happy you're paying dues again.
Oh, yes, yes, I am. I am indeed, yes. But they welcomed me with opened wands or whatever. I don't know.
Open wand arms, maybe.
Oh, yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Wanded arms.
But empty sleeves, yeah.
One more thing, going back to the out of this world card thing. There is a difference between card trick or tricks in general, but I think specifically sleight of hand stuff that fools magicians versus fooling lay people. And I think fooling, the difference being that if you show a lay people a trick that fools magicians versus one that's designed for a general audience, they might not see a gigantic jump. But a magician who's following the movements, you really have to almost know how they're going to
that's
think
right.
To fool them. Is that maybe some of the root of the engineering, like we were talking about earlier, of understanding how a brain works that helps you in terms of identifying the I don't want to call them frauds, but people who apply for the $1 million challenge.
Well, you got to understand another thing too. You see, when magicians go to see a magic show, now Andrew and I, for example, have sat side by side watching a Copperfield show.
Yes,
like in the fourth row or so. When he gives out comps, so they're usually so close you're looking straight up his nose. There was some layman with us, and Andrew would elbow me at one point and say, wow.
Andrew Main, the publisher of iTrick.
Exactly. He would elbow me, or I would elbow him and say, cool. And other people around saying, he didn't do anything. Because we had caught the moment of truth.
Yes.
We saw it because we're prepared to see it. And it may be a subtle thing, like while he's talking, he places his hand in his pocket casually.
Yes.
And either comes out with something or leaves something behind, perhaps. This is just hypothetical, of course.
Yes.
But we spot that, and we assess it, we evaluate it, and we say, oh, wow, that was cool. You know, that was slick. That was well done. And we know where the girl is. She's already out of the box, and she's in the dressing room making up for the next act.
Yes.
She didn't really vanish in underneath the scarf or whatever.
And I think that's the difference between the way a magician thinks and watching something like that is that even if you, like you said, you mentioned, you identify the moment of truth, that's not the cool part.
That's right.
You know, the cleverness of how things are going down and the uniqueness of
that. And that's not the denouement of the whole thing. That's not what the audience suddenly rears up and says, oh, wow, and start to applaud.
Yeah.
And we often don't applaud because we saw it already, and we, in our minds, we applauded the performer because we saw how clever
silent
it was.
Claps.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that was not at that moment. That was not the moment of truth.
That would be inappropriate. You just stand up in the middle of the train and be
Like,
that was great, David.
Yes, yes. Beautifully done. Beautifully done, yes. Got away with it. Very slick.
All right. So are there any names of consultants that you have really, really relied on here at JRAF?
In many cases, these are consultants who are in science. For example, Chip Denman, the University of Maryland, is our statistician, and he has been with us for many years now, and I am totally ignorant when it comes to statistics, because statistics, as I'm sure your listeners know, you certainly do, and I certainly do, that statistics is not intuitive.
Yes.
It is not something that necessarily obeys the laws that we would expect it to obey. It has different rules, and so you need to be aware of those things. And mind you, when you test these rules or these laws of statistics, they work. They work very well, and that's the final test of them. But I often have to call Chip and ask him his opinion on something or other, if the chances are so-and-so and such, and so many objects are involved, or and so many guesses are being made, what are the chances, and what do we do about that? And now that's one field of expertise. In some cases, I will call my good friend Bob Park of the American Physical Society if it's a question of physics.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain people that I call on optics and electromagnetism and electronic circuits and computers. Of course, that's a different matter altogether, and there are so many experts around us that can give us that information. But I am not an expert in too many subjects. I'm an expert in only two things, really: how people are fooled, and more importantly, how they fool themselves. And I understand the art of the conjurer, the magician, if you will, and I can pretty well rely on myself, except that there are occasions, well, I'll call Charlie Reynolds in New York, for example.
Yeah.
If I need to know the history of some particular illusion or move or subterfuge. And he can often give me, pretty well always give me, the reference that I need for it.
So you have a shadow army of consultants, yes, just waiting in the wings.
Literally hundreds of them all over the world, because we have academic people in various parts of the world who are on tap, and all I need to do, and we have them in Japan and Australia, and South Africa, and in the UK, all over Europe, and in Canada. So they're all over the world, and it's just a case of summoning them and giving them a proposition and saying, what do we do in this case? And they give us definitive answers.
Questions? Comments? Topic suggestions? Email randy@itricks.com.
itricks.com.